Državni izpitni center.
Matura 2004.
Preverjanje slušnega razumevanja.
Lepo pozdravljeni. Pričenja se reševanje maturitetne izpitne pole slušnega razumevanja angleščine.
Izpitna pola je sestavljena iz dveh delov, dela A in dela B. Vsak del vsebuje govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in nalogo, ki se nam nanaša.
Najprej boste nalogo prebrali, nato boste poslušali govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in lahko že med poslušanjem nalogo sproti reševali. Vsako govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo boste poslušali po dvakrat, vmes pa bo premor za reševanje. Začetek in konec govorjenega besedila bo označeval takle zvočni znak.
Odgovore z nalivnim peresom ali s kemičnim svinčnikom upisujte na list za odgovore v zato predvideni prostor. Če se zmotite, odgovor prečrtajte in napišite na novo. Nečitljive rešitve in nejasni popravki se točkujejo z nič točkami.
Po reševanju obeh delov, dela A in dela B, boste imeli minuto časa, da na listu za odgovore s svinčnikom počrnite ustrezne krogce pri nalogi A.
Zaupajte vase in v svoje sposobnosti. Želimo vam veliko uspeha.
To so bila splošna navodila. Zdaj boste začeli reševati izpitne naloge.
Poslušajte pozorno. Odprite izpitno polo.
Section A. You're going to hear a recording about health resorts in Britain and Germany. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column true or false on your answer sheet. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the statements.
There were about a dozen British spa towns, places where natural mineral springs were once exploited for their health-giving properties. Most had their heyday 300 years ago. You can still drink the waters, but apart from one or two exceptions, the baths have gone. Now, though, our love of natural remedies could make hot pools and steam rooms commercially viable again. Bath, Britain's most famous spa town, is opening a new spa centre with pools and steam rooms. So what might these waters have to offer? Karen Hoggan has been to Bath and to Germany to find out.
It's lunchtime in the Grand Pump Room at the Roman Baths in Bath Spa. Here you can still try drinking the famous mineral water. It's a bit of an acquired taste, I must admit, and I don't seem to have quite acquired that taste yet. It's very warm as it comes out of the ground, and it does taste very, very minerally. But it's supposed to cleanse the blood and do wonders for your digestive system. And over the centuries, plenty of people have come here to try it.
More recently, the spa waters, not just here in Bath, but elsewhere in the UK, have been neglected. Until relatively recently, you used to be able to get ailments like rheumatism and arthritis treated at a spa, and the NHS would pick up the bill. All you needed was your doctor to refer you for hydrotherapy. That stopped in the 70s because mineral waters fell out of fashion and hospitals started using ordinary water. Peter Rollins is the marketing manager of Terme, a Dutch-owned company involved in Bath's redevelopment as a spa.
Whenever I think about the waters here in Bath, whenever I think they've been literally going down the drain, down into the River Avon for the last 20, 23 years, it just seems unbelievable. It's not a crime, but it's certainly almost unbelievable. And whenever I think that places like Droitwich have got their brine baths, Buxton's have got natural sources of water, even some of the seaside resorts who could make use of the sea water for thalassotherapy and other types of treatments, it does seem as if Britain as a country has really lost an opportunity there.
Other countries haven't ignored their natural resources. In Germany alone, there are around 350 spa towns. This thermal bath in Bad Kreuznach is just one of them. The salt water here is supposed to be good for the skin and the joints. Over the years, spa culture has become part of the German way of life. People are frequently sent on what's known as a cure by their doctors, all paid for by the German equivalent of the National Health Service. But that's changing. In the late 90s, the government announced cutbacks in health provision. So, for example, instead of being sent on a cure for 4 weeks every 3 years, it's now been reduced to 3 weeks every 4 years. Still not bad, but it's meant about 200 clinics in spa towns have closed down, and some 20,000 jobs have been lost. The spas are having to fight back, says Reinhard Petrie of the European Spas Association.
There is, I think, in all the European states, not enough money for health by public institutions, so people are obliged to find self-paying guests. All the institutions, all the installations, they have to earn money. And without the private money of private paying guests, they can't survive.
Now you will hear the recording again.
There were about a dozen British spa towns, places where natural mineral springs were once exploited for their health-giving properties. Most had their heyday 300 years ago. You can still drink the waters, but apart from one or two exceptions, the baths have gone. Now, though, our love of natural remedies could make hot pools and steam rooms commercially viable again. Bath, Britain's most famous spa town, is opening a new spa centre with pools and steam rooms. So what might these waters have to offer? Karen Hoggin has been to Bath and to Germany to find out.
It's lunchtime in the Grand Pump Room at the Roman Baths in Bath Spa. Here you can still try drinking the famous mineral water. It's a bit of an acquired taste, I must admit, and I don't seem to have quite acquired that taste yet. It's very warm as it comes out of the ground, and it does taste very, very minerally. But it's supposed to cleanse the blood and do wonders for your digestive system. And over the centuries, plenty of people have come here to try it.
More recently, the spa waters, not just here in Bath, but elsewhere in the UK, have been neglected. Until relatively recently, you used to be able to get ailments like rheumatism and arthritis treated at a spa, and the NHS would pick up the bill. All you needed was your doctor to refer you for hydrotherapy. That stopped in the 70s because mineral waters fell out of fashion and hospitals started using ordinary water. Peter Rollins is the marketing manager of Terme, a Dutch-owned company involved in Bath's redevelopment as a spa.
Whenever I think about the waters here in Bath, whenever I think they've been literally going down the drain, down into the River Avon for the last 20, 23 years, it just seems unbelievable. It's not a crime, but it's certainly almost unbelievable. And whenever I think that places like Droitwich have got their brine baths, Buxton's have got natural sources of water, even some of the seaside resorts who could make use of the sea water for thalassotherapy and other types of treatments, it does seem as if Britain as a country has really lost an opportunity there.
Other countries haven't ignored their natural resources. In Germany alone, there are around 350 spa towns. This thermal bath in Bad Kreuznach is just one of them. The salt water here is supposed to be good for the skin and the joints. Over the years, spa culture has become part of the German way of life. People are frequently sent on what's known as a cure by their doctors, all paid for by the German equivalent of the National Health Service. But that's changing. In the late 90s, the government announced cutbacks in health provision. So, for example, instead of being sent on a cure for 4 weeks every 3 years, it's now been reduced to 3 weeks every 4 years. Still not bad, but it's meant about 200 clinics in spa towns have closed down, and some 20,000 jobs have been lost. the spas are having to fight back, says Reinhard Petrie of the European Spas Association.
There is, I think, in all the European states, not enough money for health by public institutions. So people are obliged to find self-paying guests. All the institutions, all the installations, they have to earn money. And without the private money of private paying guests, they can't survive.
This is the end of Section A.
Section B. You're going to hear a recording about wonder trees. As you listen to the recording, write your answers in the spaces provided on your answer sheet. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the questions.
Anna, in your research into tropical forests, have you ever come across super trees?
Oh, absolutely. And it was very interesting listening to Tim. He made so many points that were really familiar from the tropical situation. Foresters love super trees. They, I've often come across them as wonder trees. And I can think of two examples in particular where people have got really carried away in taking them out of their native ecosystems where they generally a balance is maintained between the trees and the insects.
So why the name wonder tree, super tree?
Well, because they're expected to be able to do everything. They can produce food, timber, they can stabilise the soil, or at least they're expected to be able to do so. And now that we've moved more from forestry into agroforestry and these trees are supposed to help poor farmers as well, they're widely promoted to people as something that can help in their livelihoods.
And 20 years ago, we were talking about trees that occurred naturally. They weren't meddled with by man, were they? Is that right?
Oh, no, they were trees just that were taken from their native countries into new situations where they grew much better because they weren't attacked by pests.
And Andrew mentioned that they were related to peas, giant peas.
Yes.
They were actually legumes, a lot of them. That was that they were nitrogen fixing, so they had an important role in what we call alley farming and systems in the tropics.
But I must pick up on Tim's point. He said that they can sometimes become invasive. And
absolutely.
And the two that are most widely called wonder trees, one of them has become very problematic for farmers in many semi-dry parts of the tropics where it's become really a weed. They can't get rid of it now and it grows where it's really not wanted. And another one, I've just come back from Ghana studying the problems caused by it growing far too prolifically.
And there was another problem with this over-concentration of the trees that Anna mentioned. It neglected research in many other parts of the tropics on a wide range of trees which were probably less problematic within their own environments.
Derek, the Forestry Commission used to have a terrible reputation for growing monocultures, didn't it? They decided not to go ahead and import these trees, and that presumably demonstrates they did an about turn.
Well, I hope it meant that they were already seeing sustainability as their way forward. They're certainly realising today, in no uncertain terms, that just producing trees the way they tried to do it is just not going to work. And we saw after the great 87 hurricane how when they replanted they were much more sustainable in their approach with hardwood edges and even allowing some open areas for some of the wildlife to come back into areas where they'd been before. Now, it seems to me that nowadays the Forestry Commission have really got their act together and they're much more about nature conservation integrated into their management and even about recreation now and outdoor activities. And who knows, in the future, they may find that some of these massive forests are far more productive for nature conservation, recreation, tourism, and may even bring them a better income.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Anna, in your research into tropical forests, have you ever come across super trees?
Oh, absolutely, and it was very interesting listening to Tim. He made so many points that were really familiar from the tropical situation. Foresters love super trees. They I've often come across them as wonder trees, and I can think of two examples in particular where people have got really carried away in taking them out of their native ecosystems, where they generally a balance is maintained between the trees and the insects.
So why the name wonder tree, super tree?
Well, because they're expected to be able to do everything. They can produce food, timber, they can stabilise the soil, or at least they're expected to be able to do so. And now that we've moved more from forestry into agroforestry, and these trees are supposed to help poor farmers as well, they're widely promoted to people as something that can help in their livelihoods.
And 20 years ago, we were talking about trees that occurred naturally. They weren't meddled with by man, were they? Is that right?
Oh, no, they were trees just that were taken from their native countries into new situations where they grew much better because they weren't attacked by pests.
And Andrew mentioned that they were related to peas, giant peas.
Yes.
They were actually legumes, a lot of them. That was that they were nitrogen fixing, so they had an important role in what we call alley farming and systems in the tropics.
But I must pick up on Tim's point. He said that they can sometimes become invasive, and
the two that are
most widely called wonder trees, one of them has become very problematic for farmers in many semi-dry parts of the tropics, where it's become really a weed. They can't get rid of it now, and it grows where it's really not wanted. And another one, I've just come back from Ghana studying the problems caused by it growing far too prolifically.
And there was another problem with this over-concentration of the trees that Anna mentioned. It neglected research in many other parts of the tropics on a wide range of trees which were probably less problematic within their own environments.
Derek, the Forestry Commission used to have a terrible reputation for growing monocultures, didn't it? They decided not to go ahead and import these trees, and that presumably demonstrates they did an about turn.
Well, I hope it meant that they were already seeing sustainability as their way forward. They're certainly realising today, in no uncertain terms, that just producing trees the way they tried to do it is just not going to work. And we saw after the great 87 hurricane how when they replanted, they were much more sustainable in their approach with hardwood edges, and even allowing some open areas for some of the wildlife to come back into areas where they'd been before. Now, it seems to me that nowadays the Forestry Commission have really got their act together, and they're much more about nature conservation integrated into their management, and even about recreation now and outdoor activities. And who knows, in the future, they may find that some of these massive forests are far more productive for nature conservation, recreation, tourism, and may even bring them a better income.
This is the end of section B.
Zdaj imate še minuto časa, da na listu za odgovore s svinčnikom počrnite ustrezne krogce pri nalogi A.
Končuje se slušno preverjanje angleščine. Nehajte pisati, zaprite izpitno polo in jo skupaj z listom za odgovore položite na rob mize.
Nasvidenje in srečno!